Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Welcome to Family Talk Weekend. I'm Roger Marsh, and thanks for making time during your weekend to take us along or to have us with you at home. Family Talk is listener-supported radio, and your partnership makes these programs possible. We have a great program for you today, so let's jump right in.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. James Dobson, and welcome to Family Talk. Before we start the program today that we've scheduled, I have something very important to share with you. The United States Supreme Court issued an historic ruling on abortion that most of you have been celebrating. As you know, Roe v. Wade was struck down, which millions of people have been cheering. They prayed diligently for these past 49 years, and 63 million babies have been murdered in those five decades. There have been times of despair, real despair, and disappointment along the way. At last, the tide has changed, and the legality of abortion has been given to the people to decide where it belonged in the first place. But I pray that people will have the courage to stand up in the pulpit and say, because of this decision, millions of babies will live. They will have an opportunity to grow and to become adults, and we must not lose sight of that fact. Why would we not celebrate it?
I'm Roger Marsh, and the program you're about to hear was recorded in January 2022 at the National March for Life in Washington, D.C. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Dr. James Dobson Family Talk. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, President of the American Association of Christian Counselors, and your co-host. We're here in Washington, D.C. with our JDFI, that's the James Dobson Family Institute broadcast team, at the National Pro-Life Summit, the 48th annual March for Life, held on the 49th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. There are so many pro-life leaders here at the summit, and I have one of those leaders joining me right now, Toni McFadden. She's dedicated her life to being a voice for the voiceless. Her passion for preborn babies comes out of her own abortion experience. In particular, Toni works to expose the lies of the abortion industry in order to prevent other women from choosing to abort their babies. Toni is also the founder of a program that she calls Relationships Matter. That organization urges teens to honor their future spouses and themselves by equipping them to walk in healthy relationships. She's a graduate of Westchester University. Toni earned her master's degree in biblical counseling from Clark Summit University. She's been married for over 11 years and is blessed with four children. Toni, thank you for joining us here on Family Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. And I love James Dobson. I love the ministry. I've learned so much from your ministry, and I'm so glad that I'm able to speak with you today.
Well, we're going to win this fight, you know, together. That's what it's all about. And by the way, what an electric, encouraging event it's been this weekend here. And you had an opportunity to speak. You said you stepped up to the microphone. That was quite an opportunity, wasn't it?
I think that I'm still taking it in. I just remember stepping up to the microphone and seeing a sea of people all the way to the Lincoln Memorial, taking a quick breath and saying, okay, Lord, this is what you've called me to.
Toni, everybody has story, things that kind of weave together the tapestry of their lives. And often the messy parts usually become our message in life. For you, you found yourself as a young teenage girl, 18, pregnant, and that's a pretty dark place to be, isn't it? Especially when you get the news and you feel all alone. You want to take us back there?
Yes, I actually remember writing out how I felt in my journal. And I wouldn't say I was even a believer, but I knew that God existed. And I actually still have that journal. And I said, dear God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I remember being in that place and telling my best friend, and the first thing she said to me was, "You can't keep it." And then we told my boyfriend, and he said, "She doesn't want to keep it, does she?" And I thought abortion was my only way out. I didn't want to tell my family because I was known as like the good one, my family. So they would have never expected me to be in this situation. And when I look back now, I see the deception that was there from the abortion clinic, just telling me, "We have everything set up. We'll give you a different name. So when we call your house and your parents pick up, we will say this name so you know it was us calling." And as a teenager, I'm thinking, oh, they care about my situation.
They're going to protect me. They're going to help me.
I mean, how deceptive is that? And this is why parents need to be involved with what's going on with their kids as well. But I literally thought this was my only option, because when you're in crisis mode, you can't see beyond your crisis.
No.
And I remember walking into the abortion clinic and immediately wanting to run out. It was very dark there, and I didn't understand it spiritually yet. And I remember sitting down and having almost an outer body experience. Like, how did I get here? This isn't right, but I don't know how to stop what I'm doing right now. And I thought, this will be a quick fix. My boyfriend will stay with me. My parents won't know about my secret, and my life could go along as planned. And the abortion facility made me believe the same thing. I knew nothing about fetal development. I knew nothing about procedures of abortion. I was so uneducated, and I believe they feed off of those who are uneducated in this. And I remember going to get an ultrasound. And as I walked in, I laid on the table, she pushed the screen away. And I said, "Can I see the screen?" And I could tell she was frustrated by that question. And she tried to get me not to. She said, "You know, I don't really think that's a good idea for you to see the screen." And I was like, "I just want to see." So she turned it around, and immediately, before I could say anything, she said, "See, it's nothing. It's just the size of a pea." Well, knowing what I know now, I was 7 weeks along. And if you know anything about fetal development, you know there's a heartbeat. You know, at conception, this baby had its own DNA that's never, ever going to be created again. The blueprint for their entire life, how tall they're going to be, their eye color, their skin tone. They're not going to tell you any of that, because their whole purpose of having the ultrasound is to see how far along you are so that they know how much you have to pay them. That's the only purpose for that. Because I was 7 weeks along, I was given the chemical abortion pills. And when I went into the doctor's office, it was a male. So that was uncomfortable just because it was a male. And he gave me these pills in a little cup that had dissolved in the juice. And he said, "This will stop the pregnancy." I don't know what he means except that, okay, I won't be pregnant after I take this. What I know now is that that blocked the hormone progesterone so that the baby would detach from my uterus and starve to death and die. And I took those pills, and he said, "In 24 to 48 hours, you're going to take a second set of pills in the comfort of your home, and this will expel the pregnancy." So you're giving an 18-year-old girl pills to take home herself to expel the pregnancy. And he said, "It'll be a little bit heavier than a period." I went home 24 hours later, stayed at my best friend's house, took those pills, nothing happened. And I was like, is this it? Is this, you know, that nothing happened? A month later, I'm in school, in music class, and I started out of nowhere, unexpectedly, these excruciating pains that it was so painful that I couldn't even stand up. I had to have someone help me walk to the nurse's office. And I'm not being graphic to be graphic, but this is the reality of first term abortions, which some people think are not a big deal. I finally get into the nurse's office, and there were blood clots the size of my fist leaving my body. What I didn't realize then is that was hemorrhaging. And this is the pills you're giving teenage girls, which now the FDA has lifted the restrictions that these girls now can get these through the mail.
Yeah. basically no medical advice.
Now, this was 1999 for me. I lied to the nurse and said I had cramps. I had no idea. My body was literally going through shock. And my mom came and got me. I was too afraid to tell her what was going on. And I just remember going upstairs in my bathroom, and I was in there for hours and traumatized by what I'm seeing. And the last thing I can remember is laying in fetal position in my bed, praying and hoping all of this was going to be over soon. And what I don't want to forget to mention as well is that after I went to the abortion clinic initially, my boyfriend broke up with me the day after. He just stopped talking to me. So not only was I dealing with the heartbreak of that relationship, but then I'm dealing with the trauma of this, of walking through it basically on my own. And what I did was, I think what a lot of girls do is you stuff it down and you just try to survive.
And it's a rough journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're trained in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand the word trauma.
Yeah.
And what it does to a heart. Trauma is not about remembering. Often it's about re-experiencing what you went through over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And you think of all the young girls who've had to go on that journey that you just talked about, often alone, mm-hmm. big secret, horrible nightmare. Tony, I know in your story, you talked about your journey toward healing. It took a long, long time, you said, to get over the regret, the shame, guilt from all of it. Can you mind sharing some of that?
Yeah. This is the most amazing part, because every time I get an opportunity to share my story, I look back and see the graciousness of God and his redemption in my life. I became a believer at Westchester University 3 years after I had my abortion. And it was through Campus Crusade for Christ that I became a believer. And God has always had me on an accelerated course. That's just how my life is with him. And it took me 3 years after that, though, to talk about my abortion, because I thought that was the one thing Christians wouldn't forgive me for some reason. But God is too good to keep us where we're at. So what happened was, long story short, I met a girl who spoke in schools on saving sex for marriage, and she worked for a crisis pregnancy center. And I didn't know that they were connected. I just knew she spoke in schools. So I was like, as she was telling me all of this, my heart starts beating, and I knew this was the time the Holy Spirit was like, it's time. Share your story with her. And as I shared my story with her, she said, "Do you know how many girls need to hear your story?" And I said, "I never told anyone about my abortion." And she said, "I think it's going to set a lot of other women free and spare others from going through what you went through." So I went through post-abortion counseling, and I went through Linda Cochran's Forgiven and Set Free.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I love that post-abortion counseling Bible study, because I love the scriptures that go along with the truth of healing. And it helped me also to take on my responsibility of what I did, alongside of forgiving others that I had to forgive. But I also think my real true healing came because I took responsibility of what I did. I didn't blame other people for that. And what God revealed to me was how wicked my heart was apart from him, that we're capable of so much evil when he is not Lord over our lives. And once I was able to really understand that, that made the gospel become even more beautiful to me, because I knew I don't deserve this. Like, I deserve death, but yet he took that upon himself to set me free.
As you talk to women and you journey with them, mm-hmm. who've been down this road, what do you think are one or two of the biggest challenges, the biggest hurdles for them to get through? I know the shame is a big deal. I know it's tough to forgive ourselves, to receive God's forgiveness, and then to forgive ourselves in this process. But what are you seeing?
I mean, I really think that's the biggest one. Honestly, any of the messages I get is I can't forgive myself. And that's another reason I share my story so much, because they see it. They see it in me. They know I know who I am in Jesus Christ. Yes, I'm always going to have the regret of my abortion. That's never going to leave me, because you have to live in the consequences still. I can't take it back. I think that is number one, because you can't go back and change that. But if you really know who Jesus is, he doesn't come with condemnation. He doesn't come with shame. So you have to be rooted and grounded in who Jesus says that you are. And I think it's almost, and I hope this doesn't come off the wrong way, it's almost disrespectful to think that his blood wasn't enough. Do you believe his blood was enough to cover that sin?
Tony, I wanted to ask you about the abortion industry's message of freedom. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you will not be enslaved. You won't be in bondage anymore here. That freedom thing is the biggest lie that's out there.
Yeah. When I began to research more about the history of Planned Parenthood, that's when this came about. Because I learned about Margaret Sanger. I learned about her eugenics roots of wanting to wipe the black population out, called the Negro Project, which was initiated in 1939.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. And it's working. It's still working, because over 80% of abortion clinics are in minority neighborhoods within walking distance. The black population make up about 12% of the population. And black women account for close to 40% of abortions. So we're being wiped out from abortion. So I always say to those who say Black Lives Matter, well, it needs to start in the womb. Because if we can't even get out of the womb, where is the justice there? Where is the social justice? Planned Parenthood came out recently trying to move away from Margaret Sanger. I say actions speak louder than words. And if you really want to move away from her name, get your clinics out of our neighborhoods.
It seems like there's a lot of energy, excitement that's going on right now in the pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. It seems like the pro-life movement's winning. Yeah. There's a lot happening. Tony, I know you are out there. You know about the Texas case, the Mississippi case, and more. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? What are you seeing? Mm-hmm. And what's your hope?
I don't think the pro-life movement will ever stop being the pro-life movement. Women are still going to face crisis pregnancies.
They are.
And the church needs to be the church where women are running towards the church if they end up in this situation, not away from the church. And I think pregnancy resource centers need to be innovative and meeting these women.
Tony, I wanted to ask you about your organization, Relationships Matter. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to get done.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get done is getting to the root cause, and that is upholding sex and relationships in a valuable way, because our culture has degraded sex, is degraded marriage, and it's affecting our kids. I mean, more kids are in households with a single parent, divorced parents, than parents that are together. And I think we have to get to the root of that right now in our country, because the family unit is everything. And I fought really hard for that myself. I didn't get to share this part of it, but this is a miracle from Jesus. Is the guy that I married almost 10 years later, after I was speaking in schools and everything, was the same guy I had the abortion with. So he came back and found me to apologize. I had no idea he had become a believer. He didn't know I was a believer. He just came back to apologize to me. And a year after meeting, he got married.
What a story.
And we have now 4 children. And we were able to honor our unborn baby at our wedding to acknowledge their life.
Really?
Yeah. And we are living proof that your past doesn't have to determine your future. So I think it's important for me to not only say these things to teenagers, but to see that I've been on both sides and I've lived it out, and I'm on the other side and I'm saying it's worth it, even though it's not the easiest thing to walk out.
You know, in mental health, we know this, that the antidote to trauma is relationship.
Yeah.
I like to say that kids aren't afraid of the dark. They're afraid of being alone in the dark. And too often when we go through really rough spots in life, the evil one wants us to believe that we're all alone, that nobody cares, that God doesn't care, that he's not there for us. But as we press into one another, we hold on, and we've got to cling to that blessed truth. You know that? As we pursue truth, that's where I think God begins to do his best work. We can peel back all those chains and all those challenges that we're up against and find the hope and the healing that's ours. I want you to speak to maybe that young 18-year-old who's out there, maybe listening, and they're in trouble. And what do you say to them, Tony?
I would first say to parents that your voice is more powerful than you think in your kids' lives. I think parents often are afraid to have difficult conversations. You don't. It's not about being perfect. It's not about having a perfect story for them. It's being honest and authentic. Children gravitate towards authenticity. They know when you're being fake. They can read you like a book. Just from speaking it to middle school, high school, college students, when you are authentic, even if they don't want to agree with what you're saying, they will still gravitate towards it because there's something in them that knows this person cares about me. And so I would say to parents, don't be afraid to have the hard conversations, that your voice is more powerful than anybody else's because you're with them. Don't underestimate that. To the young girl who is in trouble, who's dealing with maybe a crisis pregnancy, I would tell them what I wish someone would have told me. And that is, yes, this crisis is in front of you, but you're not alone. There are organizations, there are people who will go before you and help you and walk you through whatever you need, whether that's financial, whether that's emotionally, that there is someone out there that can help you and that you're stronger than you think, that this life inside of you is a part of you. It is a person that has value. And it's not that that child inside of you is more valuable than you. Yeah. You're both valuable, but at the same time, you can get beyond this crisis. You're not going to stay there forever, that there's always hope on the other side.
You know, the words of our friend Max Lucado, you will get through this. And I'm reminded of the words of Chuck Swindoll when he said, the busy, preoccupied parent misses many a cue or moment to step up into those kind of moments and be that voice of hope and reason in times of darkness. Tony, what a delight to have this conversation with you. What a story. I can see how God's going to use you in mighty ways. He already is. And we pray that God would advance Relationships Matter, your organization. If people want to learn more about you and how they could get connected with you, where do they go?
You can go to my website, tonymcfadden.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, Tony McFadden.
Oh, that's so great. Well, hey, listen, on behalf of Dr. Dobson, his wife Shirley, our team at Family Talk, we salute you, the great work God's doing in and through you, and for your position on life. What a voice. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Psalm 103, verses 11 and 12, speaking about God's love, say, for as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and Dr. Tim Clinton's conversation with author and pro-life speaker Tony McFadden. Their conversation was recorded back in January at the National Pro-Life Summit in Washington, D.C. As you just heard, Tony has an incredibly powerful testimony. She actually recently released a book about her story. It's titled Redeemed: My Journey After Abortion. You can find a link to her book and information about her ministry and more at drjamesdobson.org/family talk. Or you can give us a call at 877-732-6825. And for all of us here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, I'm Roger Marsh. And be sure to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hey everyone, did you know that radio is more popular now than ever? A new feature here at Family Talk we're excited to announce. It's called the Station Finder feature. This is Dr. Tim Clinton for Family Talk. I want to tell you how you can listen to our daily broadcast on a station near you. Go to the broadcast menu at drjamesdobson.org, then click on the Family Talk Radio Stations button. Once you're there, you're going to see an interactive map of radio affiliates, which, by the way, is growing every day. Simply click on your home state, and then you'll see where our broadcast is airing in your town. Stop randomly spinning around the dial, hoping to find Dr. Dobson and Family Talk. Go to drjamesdobson.org and take advantage of this brand new Station Finder feature.